Joy.
WMFO Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there is no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. Pre-recorded.
Thank you, Digital Henry. Good morning. It is the 7th of April, 2021, and I am Arthur, the host here of the Grand Hour, here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford Tufts Freeform Radio. I'm not going to continue with Anne of the Airwaves from 2 weeks ago for Women's History Month, but I flipped a coin. I was going to have a double feature, a detective double feature, and I flipped a coin, and ladies first, I am going to continue with a Candy Matson. This is the Egyptian Amulet, with an original air date of the 12th of September, 1950. Thanks for listening.
Hello, Yukon 28209. Yes, this is Candy Matson.
Candy, how's the one-woman Scotland Yard?
Oh, okay, Inspector. If business was any better, you fellows could all retire on your big fat pensions. Is Mallard in his office?
Oh, sure. I just left him there. He's working on a deal, but it's all right.
A deal? Oh, I won't bother him then.
It's all right. When last observed, he was perched neatly on the horns of a dilemma.
Ouch. Well, in that case, I'd better go in, Inspector.
Righto. Drop around any time. High heels sound so much nicer than flat feet.
Thank you, sir. Good morning, Lieutenant Mallard.
Candy, for Pete's sake, I wish you'd knock when you'd come in here.
Why?
Well, I might have been,
What, Mallard?
Asleep or something. Well, now that you're in, pull up a chair and set a spell.
I heard you were busy.
You heard I was busy, so you barge right in?
I can always barge right out again, you know.
No, stick around. I've done all I can for now.
What have you got, a murder?
In homicide, I'd be working on a purse snatching. Here, take a look. Ever see anything like that before?
Nope. Looks like a small medallion of some kind.
I don't think so. Near as I can figure, it's the symbol of an order or a cult. You recognize the characters on it?
Oh, they seem to have an Egyptian flavor.
That was my thinking, too. However, I'm not an Egyptologist.
You can always take it over to the University of California.
University of California?
What's wrong with that?
Well, it'd be like cutting off my own nose. I've got Stanford and 6 points in the big game.
After what UCLA did to them?
Oh, no, sir.
From now on, I will knock before I come in here. And if I get an answer, I'm going to leave.
You've got a point there.
I know I have.
I mean about taking this over to the university.
Hey, wait a minute. Why didn't I think of it before?
What?
Rembrandt. He has a brushing acquaintance with the Egyptian language and writing.
Rembrandt? Rembrandt Watson? Oh, you're kidding.
No, I'm not. He spent quite a bit of time in Egypt before the war. Come on, get in the car and we'll drive over to his place. I've got to see him anyway.
I'm sorry, Candy. No can do. I got to be in Judge Wallach's court in 10 minutes.
Well, let me have it and I'll take it over to him. If Rembrandt comes up with anything, I'll report right back.
Okay, just don't lose it, that's all.
Why? Can't you get another one?
Well, not this particular one, we can't. We took it off the body of a woman they found floating last night in Stowe Lake.
Stowe Lake in Golden Gate Park?
Mm-hmm.
What a charming place to take your last bath. Oh, I almost forgot what I came here for to begin with. Here's the book I borrowed from you, Mallard, dear.
Book? Which book is that?
Latest facts and figures on the rise and fall of crime throughout the Western Hemisphere, plus a comprehensive digest on criminal trends in the United States as compiled by police departments of major cities throughout the country.
Oh, thanks. Did you get anything out of it?
The book? Heck no. I just barely managed to get through the title.
The National Broadcasting Company presents Candy Matson, Yukon 28209.
I slipped the medallion into my coin purse, slipped the coin purse into my handbag, slipped Mallard a peck on the cheek, and slipped out of the Hall of Justice. I climbed into my car and drove over to California Street opposite old St. Mary's Cathedral, almost bordering Little Alley facing St. Mary's Square. It is there that a very old friend of mine lives, Rembrandt Watson, the eminent Pacific Coast photographer.
I'm so glad you came by, Dove. Today of all days, I need the firm stanchion of your friendship upon which to brace myself.
Rembrandt, what on earth are you talking about?
Never has the weight of gloom rested so heavily on me shoulders. Never has the mantle of depression hung o'er me head as it does now.
Oh, put the hand back in the icebox. What gives here, Ducky?
You are gazing upon a man about to be bereft of a home.
You mean you're being evicted?
Not yet. One must face eventualities.
Can't you pay your rent? Is that it?
Oh, no, be silly, Candy. I have plenty of money.
Well, then, in heaven's name, why the Hamlet routine? What do you mean you're going to be evicted?
Well, simply this, girl. A bunch of uncouth varlets are going to build an underground garage in the square next door. May I ask what is so funny?
Well, you probably won't have to move. Chances are they'll never touch this building.
But think, Candy. The dirt, the noise.
Well, I've never known either one to affect you before, Rembrandt.
It's not meself I'm thinking about. It's Henry, me great Dane. All those steam shovels and riveting machines that have to give Henry a nervous stomach.
And on a great Dane, that's something.
Yes, isn't it? And here's something that'll prove I'll be evicted. Look, this morning's paper.
Mm-hmm.
Right down here.
Preliminary to construction of a garage beneath St. Mary's Square was approved yesterday by the Board of Supervisors Finance Committee. The project, recommended by the San Francisco Parking Authority, involves use of St. Mary's Park subsurface area and seven adjacent parcels of privately owned property in the area bounded by Kearney, Pine, California, and St. Ann Street.
There. Do you see what I mean?
Well, I'd hardly call this hovel a parcel, but yes, I do see what you mean. Well, what are you going to do about it?
What can I do about it? Look for a new place to live, that's all.
Laddie boy, I'm glad you said that. I've been meaning to have a word with you for quite some time. Now, you're doing a whale of a good business. More and more, you're catering to an extremely fashionable clientele.
That's true.
It's about time you lived the part. Your photographs are becoming known throughout the country. You couldn't have stayed here much longer anyway.
But it has such atmosphere, Candy.
That it does, especially when the wind's from the east. Tell you what, you help me on a little deal right now, and I'll spend the rest of the day looking at places with you.
Oh, Candy, will you? I was hoping you'd say that. You're a lamb.
In the spring, I am.
Oh, I get it. Spring lamb.
Yes.
Oh, la. I feel ever so much better already.
Attaboy. But before you bound completely out of your skin, Ducky, take a look at this. Wait a minute. There.
Fascinating. What is it? An amulet of some kind?
I don't know. That's why I came to see you. What does it say on there?
It's in the Arabic. Awfully fine print. What did I do with me glasses?
On your forehead.
Oh. El Madi, El Hada, El Mastakbal, whom? There's one I can't seem to translate. Wait a moment. Oh, of course. Milky.
What does it mean, Rembrandt?
Well, I'm not exactly sure of my translation, but I'd take it to read the past, the present, the future are mine.
Well, that sounds good enough to me. Let me make a phone call, dear, and I'll be right with you. Tell me, Ducky, does that expression mean anything to you? Have you ever heard it before?
No. There are literally thousands of such sayings in Arabic. It could refer to almost anything.
That's what I was wondering about.
Headquarters, DeLucci speaking.
Oh, hello, DeLucci. This is Candy Matson. Is Lieutenant Mallard there?
Lieutenant Mallard? No, Miss Matson. He left with Judge Wallach and the jury on that Happy Dan supermarket killing. Out of Lake Merced. Probably be there the rest of the afternoon.
Oh, okay. Would you write this down for me?
Okay.
El Maji, El Hader, El Mastakbal, Humilki.
Miss Matson, this is a phone conversation?
It's legit.
Well, in that case, Gesundheit.
Thank you. Now, have you got that?
I guess so.
Good. Just sign my name to it and put it on Mallard's desk, will you?
Sure, if you say so.
Thanks, DeLucci. Goodbye.
Candy, are you crazy? Mallard won't understand that.
Crazy? Just the other way around. This is one night I know I'm going to get Mallard to call me.
Candy, you fool. But you're a nice fool. Just having you assure me that moving from here is the right thing to do has removed all me troubled thoughts. Transform me into a blithe spirit.
A blithe spirit. Well, come on, blithe spirit. Let's go haunt for houses. Knowing Rembrandt as I do, he's the sort of a man who would open a doll factory across the street from a boys' school. But in this case, I was going to make sure he'd fit the locale to the business and vice versa. But what was the locale to be? Suddenly, I had it. There was a barn type of building out on Octavia Street, just off Pacific. Used to be a dance studio, but somehow or other, I seem to recall a for rent sign on the place. And that's where we went.
What is it, Candy? Looks like the place might have been a stable.
Ooh, I imagine it was at one time. I do know it was a dance studio for a while.
It's for rent, all right. There's the sign.
Mm-hmm. I hope we can get in. You'll like it, I'm sure. It's just ideal for a photography studio. And it has plenty of room upstairs for living quarters and a fine big backyard out in back for Henry.
Sounds ideal. If I could only see it.
Let's walk around to that little wooden bridge at the side. Maybe there's a window we can peek through. If not, we'll run down to the real estate office.
You see?
Mm-hmm. The outside needs fixing up, but not too much.
No, as a matter of fact, if the place is any kind of shape at all and the owner is willing to talk business, I might be interested in buying the place.
What?
Well, why not? Now that I'm in the mood, and I've saved a fair amount of money the past year or two.
Oh, here's a window. Pretty dirty. Wait a minute.
Can you see anything, Candy?
A little. Enough to give you an idea how much space you have in the studio itself. Here, take a look.
Oh, it's wonderful. Just perfect. I could do all the portrait work up in front there and put all the equipment back in the... Oh!
Ducky, what is it?
I saw a man in there.
Let's see. He's motioning to us. I don't understand what... Is there a door down that way, Rembrandt?
Wait till I take a look. Yes, I see one.
Oh, that's what he wants. Come on.
Who do you suppose he is, dear?
Caretaker, maybe. We'll find out.
Was there something you wanted?
We're just looking around. We saw the sign out in front. Are you the caretaker?
No. I am the owner.
Oh, then you live here.
Again, no. There was a fire here last night. I came over to investigate.
A fire?
Yes. There wasn't much damage done. One of the neighbors saw it, and the fire department arrived almost immediately.
Lucky for you. How much rent are you asking?
I'm afraid you'll have to take that up with the real estate people. I let them handle all my transactions.
Would you be willing to sell?
I might, but that's something you have to discuss with them, too. That sounds odd, does it not? But much better off if I don't transact my own business.
Sure. Would you mind if we looked around? Mr. Watson here is rather interested.
I'm afraid that is out of the question. You see, the electricity has been turned off. You would have to use matches.
We'll be very careful, sir.
I've got matches right here in my purse.
No. It is impossible. After what happened last night, I'm afraid things might be misunderstood. I should be accused of...
Accused? Accused of what, Mr....
What did you say your name was?
I didn't, and neither did you. We have a quaint custom here in the United States.
I am not interested in custom. I'm only interested in keeping my appointment.
You'll keep your appointment, I assure you. Do you remember high-low, Rembrandt?
Oh, yes. A quaint little device used with a great deal of success on the gridiron.
Yes. Would you like to take high and I'll take low?
A pleasure, really. Now.
Get his arms if you can, Rembrandt.
I'm trying to think this like an eel.
I think he needs a little persuasion on the head like so.
Oh, dear. I hope you didn't tap him too hard.
No, he just went sleepy by for a little while.
May I ask the reason for this unwomanly outburst on your part, Dove?
You certainly may, Slugger. Look, up there on that beam above us.
Oh, dear. Wear me glasses.
Back up on your forehead.
Oh. Now, what did you want me to see?
Up there. A sign on that beam. Just barely visible, but you can make it out.
Candy, no. El Madi, El Hada, El Mastakval, Hum Milky.
Sure. I saw it when we first came in. When the boy on the floor mentioned matches, it gave me a perfectly natural chance to open my purse and flash the medallion. He saw it, all right. He stopped like he'd been sapped.
He was?
Twice, yes. Once by the medallion, once by me. I think we've got something, Rembrandt. Come on, let's get to a phone and call Mallard quick. And may I say something, Ducky?
You certainly, dear.
Well, I shouldn't say it, but that was the prettiest high-low I've ever seen.
From San Francisco, the National Broadcasting Company is presenting Candy Matson, Yukon 28209.
I left my gun with Rembrandt, who by this time was sitting on our little friend. I took off, found a grocery store about 3 blocks down, and placed a call to Mallard. Fortunately, he was in, and after I told him what was happening, he was out again, this time headed for the former dance studio. I ran back to the place, and Sleeping Beauty was showing signs of coming too, with Rembrandt still riding a choppy C on the guy's twisting chest.
I'm so glad you're back, girl. Miss Steed is beginning to buck a bit, and I did so want to avoid smacking him on the noggin again.
Yeah, I don't blame you. After a while, it begins to hurt. Here, give me the gun, Rembrandt. Thanks. Now, stand back. If the Joker tries anything, there's going to be badminton with bullets for birds.
Did you get Mallard?
Yes, he'll be here in a moment or two.
In the Hall of Justice? That'll be forever.
You don't know Mallard when he has a chance to play with that siren.
Oh.
Yeah, Tessman's snapping out of it.
Oh, I think, miss, you will regret exceedingly what you have done.
Maybe so, maybe no. Now, care to tell us about this past, present, and future are mine stuff?
I'm not saying a word.
Does it surprise you I know the translation? You might as well tell us. You'll have to in the long run.
I have nothing to say, and I mean that.
I'll bet you do. Wait a minute. See who it is, Rembrandt.
It's Mallard and his platoon system.
Oh, good. Open the door for them.
Well, this is cozy. All you need is a fourth for bridge. And I kibitz?
He's all yours, Footflat.
Okay, get him, boys. Let's go.
Hey, wait a minute. You haven't seen the building.
The building can wait. This cookie's hot, and I want to keep him that way. Like I said, boys, take him away. Give him that big hall of justice.
1-2-3 O'Leary, and we were at the jailhouse on Washington Street. 4-5-6 O'Leary, and our lad was whisked away into the inner sanctums for a pleasant little game called Information, Please. 7-8-9 O'Leary, and Mallard was back in his office snorting fire at me. And when he snorts fire, Sister Susie, it's frightening.
What are you trying to do? Have the whole city administration down on my neck?
Why, Mallard, what do you mean?
I'll tell you what I mean. We've arrested a man who's completely in the clear. He can shoot the works at us, sue us for false arrest.
Wait a minute. Something's off the beam here. What's his name?
Tessman, Al Tessman.
How do you know he's in the clear?
Because we checked just now. He's been a respectable citizen of San Francisco for over 20 years. Owns a lot of real estate around town. Fine reputation, excellent credit, the works. And you have to stir up a hornet's nest.
I don't know what to say.
I do. Go home and stay there. I have a hunch the guy's going to press an assault and battery charge against you and Rembrandt. And he's got every legal right to do it, too.
Yipes. I wonder how I'll look in stripes. Mallard was just plain out and out sore. Judging the mess on its face value, he was entitled to be sore. But I'm not the gal to take things on face value. That sign on the beam out at the old studio definitely had a link with the inscription on the amulet. I was sure of it. And I was sure that Tessman was a link, too. So I fell back on the private eye's first lesson, how to shadow a suspect. The use of doorways, trees, buildings, shrubs, fences, and etc. So hiding behind an etc., I waited outside the Hall of Justice until I saw Tessman leave the building. All he did was snag a cab and disappear into an apartment house on the top of Clay Street. I checked the ground floor and found there were only 3 outlets. The main entrance, the service entrance alongside, and the garage around the corner. I parked across the street where I could see all three and waited. And waited. About 2 a.m., I figured Tessman had holed up for the night, so I went home and got myself a nice little jolt. My penthouse was a mess. It looked like a senior-grade monsoon had ripped through the place. It stacked up that Tessman couldn't have done it, so there must be somebody else who wanted in on the act. As far as I could tell, nothing was missing, so I straightened up as best I could and hit the sack. The alarm went off at 5 o'clock the next morning, and I struggled into my clothes, drove over to Rembrandt's place, rustled him into my car, and we took off.
You're mad, Candy. Positively mad. What's the idea of waking me up in the middle of the night?
It's not the middle of the night, Ducky. It's morning. Remember, the early birds get the worms.
For a change, I'd like to see the early worm get the bird. What are we doing gallivanting about like this?
We're putting the shadow on Tessman.
Is he the worm?
One of them. In spite of the fact that Mallard whitewashed him. Here we are.
How lush. The Blake Essex.
We'll just park here. Hunch down in your seat, Ducky. I hardly imagine our worm has departed yet. A half hour passed by. Just as the sun peeked over the East Bay hills and scattered its own bright rays on the water of the bay, a car backed out of the Blake Essex garage. It was Tessman, all right. He wheeled the car down Clay Street, and we followed. He turned left on Taylor, and again when he reached Pacific. I had a hunch where he was going. He crossed Van Ness Avenue, and we did likewise. That was when Rembrandt spoke up.
I hate to mention it, dear, but I think the shadowers are being shadowed.
How do you mean?
I've looked behind several times. There seems to be a car following us.
Just a coincidence. I wouldn't worry about it. Look, our boy's turning off onto Octavia. Just as I thought, he's returning to the studio.
What do we do now?
Go as slowly as we can. Give him time to park the car, get inside the building, and then go in after him.
Are you sure you know what you're doing, Candy?
Nope.
Oh. Well, then it's all right.
We'll go past Octavia to Laguna, then down to Broadway, and come back from that direction. That should do it. Now to double back along Broadway.
I dislike being repetitious, girl, but the car's still following us.
Well, there's nothing like a showdown. Here we are at Octavia. Let's find out. Look, across the street at the studio, out in front there. Bags of cement, sand, and a pile of bricks.
That wasn't there when we left yesterday.
No.
There's our friend, Candy, if he is.
Well, I'm going to find out about this right now.
Please, Miss Matson, remain seated in your car.
Has a gun, Candy?
That's a naive observation, Rembrandt. Looks more to me like a cannon.
I assure you, I won't hesitate using it. Now, if you and Mr. Watson will get out in an orderly manner and walk across the street into the studio, there will be no trouble.
Looks like we have no choice. Come on, Ducky. This should be great sport. When you have a gun that size poking into your nose, it's easy to be convinced. We walked across the street and into the studio. Even with the brilliant morning sunshine outside, the place was dark and grim. And Tessman Lad was waiting to meet us, wearing the very latest in smirks.
Just as you planned, Master. It was so easy. They fell into our trap beautifully. And now they shall feel no pain. To work, Tessman. There can be no further delay.
Yes, Master. It shall be done.
He calls me Master. And that is as it should be. Now, Miss Matson, now that you've so conveniently returned to our shrine, the amulet, please.
I haven't got it. I left it at home in another purse.
It wasn't in your place last night.
So you're the character who wrecked my apartment.
That is right. And now, if you will be so kind as to empty your purse on the table there.
You better do it, Candy.
Yes. There seems to be no alternative.
Now the coin purse, please. Yes, the amulet. Thank you.
There's a streetcar token, too. You can have that if you want it.
The past, the present, the future are mine. Mine, Miss Matson. An old saying of one of the ancient pharaohs. I adopted it for myself. Rather brilliant, wouldn't you say?
I'd say you need a new scriptwriter.
Now I shall tell you about your future. This building, being on a hill, was built on solid rock foundations. My faithful servant, Tessman, is an expert stonemason. You see that chamber-like affair hewn into the rock? Tessman is going to build a brick wall across it. You are going to be sealed inside, also like the ancient pharaohs. Only it will take more than a Howard Carter or a Lord Carnarvon to discover you.
The guy was a madman, and a madman usually keeps his word. Tessman went to work. Little by little, the ceiling wall of bricks took shape. Once I pressed my hand against the bricks. They must have been using a fast-hardening mortar mix of some kind. The wall was as firm as the ages. Zoma smiled. Finally, there was an opening just large enough to crawl through. That's when Zoma spoke up.
Enough, Tessman. I will complete the work.
As you will, Master.
My mission here is finished. You three are the only ones who know about me. And so I shall destroy all evidence and move on to newer fields. Tessman, in you go.
What? Master, no. No.
I have served you faithfully.
I said get in.
No, I won't die. I won't. Not even for you.
What? The fool. The future belongs to me. You two, get him.
What?
Shove him into the tomb. Now. I trust you won't be quite so idiotic. Suffocation isn't too unbearable. I think I shall call this the Tomb of the Wayward Three. Yes. That will be good. Is he in?
Yes.
Very well. You may follow.
Go ahead, Rembrandt. I'm sorry I got you into this.
It's all right.
And now for the final act. The complete obliteration. Ah, yes. People all over the world have lost their way. They struggle in darkness. It is up to me to bring them the truth. For after all, El Hadi, El Hader, El Mostak Balhum Milki, all mine.
What about that woman you dumped into Stowe Lake, Zuma?
A very generous lady. She contributed over $15,000 to the cause. But then the poor thing began to doubt me. Said something about going to the authorities. Most unfortunate. It was then that even I, Zuma, made a mistake. I forgot about the amulet I had given her. She was still wearing it about her neck. I will not make that error again. And now, like the final toast to life, the last brick. Sleep well, foolish ones. Forever.
Get your hands straight up in the air, Mac.
You desecrator.
I said get your hands up.
Yes, I will, like this.
Candy. Where are you?
Over here, Mallard. Behind this brick wall.
A fine thing, that's all I've got to say. Running around and messing things up. Boy, he's really got you tucked away, hasn't he?
Come on, Mallard, get us out of here. We can hardly breathe.
We?
Rembrandt and I.
Oh, no.
Your pal Tessman, who's past breathing.
Boy, you can sure do it, can't you, Candy? I think I ought to leave you in there. You almost messed this whole thing up.
I did. How?
Why did you think we released Tessman?
Tessman.
Yeah, I know. Ali Tessman. I'll call him Tessman. Because it was the first lead we got on this joker Zuma. We've been after him for months.
Why?
Playing on the superstitious people with a yen for the occult. We had nothing to go on until we fished that woman out of Stowe Lake with the amulet around her neck. And you have to go and stick your pretty nose into the picture.
What about Tessman?
Up until he met Zuma, he was okay. Doing quite well in real estate. Then along came the master. Tessman turned over the studio for Zuma to use as a temple. But after he dumped the tomato into Stowe Lake, Zuma realized he'd have to liquidate his affairs and get the bejavers to other parts of the country. With you and Rembrandt making like cops and robbers, he knew he had three people to get out of the way. He almost got away with it.
But how did you get here when you did?
Sheer luck, Cupcake. I was only returning to make a routine checkup on this joint. Sister, are you lucky?
You can say that again.
All right. Sister, are you? Oh. On second thought, maybe you aren't.
What do you mean, Mallard, dear?
If there's one thing I can't stand, it's an interfering woman. I think I'll just leave you in there.
Mallard, no!
Irene, good night. Irene, good night.
Mallard, you can't do this.
Irene.
Get us out of here.
Okay, on one condition.
Sure, sure. What is it?
Promise you'll go to a Roy Acuff movie with me tonight.
Roy Acuff movie? What do you think, Rembrandt?
A fate worse than death.
That's what I thought, too. So long, Mallard. On your way out, just seal in that last brick, will you?
Listen again next week at this same time For excitement and adventure, just dial
Candy Matson, Yukon 28209.
The part of Tessman was played by John Grover. Zoma was Lou Tobin. Henry Leff is heard as Lieutenant Ray Mallard, and Jack Thomas is Rembrandt Watson. The program stars Natalie Masters and is written and directed by Monty Masters. Bill Brownell creates the sound effects, and Eloise Rowan is heard at the organ. Our engineer was Frank Barron. Any resemblance to actual people is purely coincidental. The characters in the story were entirely fictitious. The program came to you from San Francisco. Dudley Manlove speaking.
I may never have met you. We don't go way back. Maybe we wouldn't even be friends if we did. But when you wear a mask, you have my respect. Because your mask doesn't protect you. It protects me. I wear my mask to protect you. Mask up, America.
Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Thank you, Ad Council, for that FCC obligation. Good morning. You're listening to the Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. For the first half of today's program, I played Candy Matson. I don't know the original episode number because I'm getting it off a collection that just kind of has some better quality ones selected. So that was the Egyptian Amulet. An original air date of the 12th of September 1950. For the second half of this detective double feature, I'm going to play Bill Bailey as yours truly, Johnny Dollar. This is the Diamond Dilemma matter. This is heard on Armed Forces Radio, and I don't know if that's their broadcast date or the original broadcast date of the program, but has it at the 2nd of March, 1958. Thanks for listening.
From Hollywood, it's time now for
Johnny Dollar.
Bert Major, Johnny. Masters Insurance and Trust.
Oh, hi, Bert.
You know anything about spacemen?
Never saw any, if that's what you mean.
Neither have I. But I know somebody who thinks he's been contacted by them.
Oh, sure. I have some whimsical friends, too.
Not funny, Johnny. The company is betting $2 million that this man is either a liar or pulling one of the biggest hoaxes in history.
$2 million?
That's right. Conrad Billings. Ever hear of him?
Billings. Texas Oil. One of the richest men in the country.
Right. Presently of California, where he's holed up in an isolated mountaintop lodge. Minus a $2 million collection of diamonds he took up there with him.
And you insured them?
Yes, but not against ordinary theft.
What does that mean?
Those stones were insured against theft by persons or things unknown on this earth.
What?
That's right.
Holy. You're serious, aren't you?
You bet I'm serious.
Okay, Bert, I'll see you at your office.
Bailey, in the exciting adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
And now, Act One of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Home Office, Masters Insurance and Trust Company, Hartford, Connecticut. Following is an account of expenses incurred during my investigation of the Diamond Dilemma matter. Expense account item one, $3.20 for a taxi to the office of Bert Major.
I've known Bert a long time, and he's been in and out of too many deals, big and little, to get excited over nothing. But he was excited now.
This whole thing is incredible, Johnny. Fantastic. It's utterly impossible for $2 million worth of diamonds to simply vanish into thin air.
So it's impossible.
But it's happened. The police out there in California state positively that no man on earth could possibly have gotten to those stones.
Then, Bertram, tell me all.
All right. 2 weeks ago, Conrad Billings called me from his lodge up in Northern California. Said he wanted to insure the diamonds immediately.
Over the phone?
Over the phone.
You're sure it was really he?
I'm not that naive. I had the call traced.
How come he called you?
We've done some business with a wealthy friend of his in Dallas. Recommended.
Uh-huh. And he had the stones with him there at the lodge?
Yes. And, Johnny, it's one of the most isolated spots on Earth.
You're sure he had them there?
He loves diamonds, Johnny. Almost to the point of obsession. He plays with them like a kid plays with marbles. Lord knows he can afford to.
So you insured $2 million worth of diamond marbles over the phone?
I did.
And you say you aren't naive all. Look, a remote lodge, an eccentric old man, some expensive baubles. A rank amateur could get at him.
You haven't listened to me, Johnny. You've missed the point entirely. I wouldn't care if he left the diamonds lying out on his front doorstep. I insured those diamonds solely against theft by persons or things unknown on this earth. That's the exact wording of the policy.
And now they're gone.
Yes.
So, someone took them.
Prove it.
What?
Someone, and not something.
Now, why would anybody in his right mind want to insure against theft by other than people?
I asked myself that question. My answer was that a billionaire in active command of his business empire must be of sound mind. And if he wants to satisfy a whim and is willing to pay for it, why should my company refuse his money?
You think maybe he has an obsession about flying saucers and the people or things who fly them?
Who knows? Or what knows? Johnny, you've got to go out there and make some sense out of all this.
Who are the contacts so far?
The head of his San Francisco office, Norton Shields. The chief of police in Lakeview, about 30 miles from Billings Lodge, and the insurer.
Okay, I'll call you, Bert, but not from Mars. Expense account item 2, $280, deluxe flight with trimmings, Hartford to San Francisco. A piece of fog was rolling up Market Street, and it was 2 a.m. when I finally got to the office of Billings Enterprises and met Norton Shields. He was wide awake, sharp, about 35.
Yes, Mr. Dollar, I've been in charge of Billings' West Coast operation for 10 years, with time out for Korea.
Pretty young for such a responsibility.
Billings hired me because I know the oil business. I learned it young.
Uh-huh. You like him?
You don't have to like a man just because you work for him. He's shrewd and knows how to make money.
But he has foibles.
Yes, he has foibles. Diamonds.
Have you ever seen them?
Sure.
Where?
Oh, here in the office, at the lodge where he is now, at his home.
You're certain he took them up to that lodge?
3 weeks ago tonight, they were spread out right here on this desk. He put them one by one in a chamois bag, put the bag in his pocket. I walked him to his car, and he was driven straight to the lodge.
All right. What about flying saucers, the spacemen, or whatever it is?
No, that's a new one. I learned of it when Mr. Major Call disclosed the terms of the insurance and the fact that the diamonds had been, that they were gone.
You haven't talked this over with Billings himself?
No, I haven't.
Don't you think you should?
Why? If he wants me, he'll call me.
How do I get to this lodge?
I have a company plane and pilot ready to fly you to Clear Lake in the morning. You'll be met there by a car and driver. Anything else you want, call me.
Why all the cooperation when you're not even supposed to know what's going on?
A good lieutenant knows when to follow orders before they're issued. You're registered at the Mark Hopkins. You better get some sleep.
Yeah, I may need it.
Act two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, in a moment. And now, act two of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, and the Diamond Dilemma Matter.
The company plane turned out to be a plush two-engine amphibian waiting for me at a private dock near the Golden Gate Bridge. The pilot introduced himself, and we headed due north up San Pablo Bay and then northwest past the Valley of the Moon. Then, a few minutes later, we glided in for a landing on Clear Lake, the largest body of water in the state of California. There, I was met by a car and a driver as promised. How far is it to Mr. Billings' lodge, driver?
About 30 miles.
What do you do when Mr. Billings isn't here?
Wait for him.
Do you, live at the lodge?
Nobody does. Just Mr. Billings.
No caretakers, housekeepers, anything like that?
Just Mr. Billings.
Well, surely there must be someone to look after.
Look, mister, I'm hired to drive a car. I do it. And that's all.
The car twisted and turned through some lush country, then left the highway and climbed a narrow mountain road with signs every couple of hundred yards marked private in big letters. After several miles of this, during which we passed through a couple of gates that had to be opened manually, we came to a high steel wire gate with equally high fencing stretching out in either direction. A small redwood blockhouse squatted inside. The driver made a U-turn, stopped in front of this gate, then reached around and opened the door.
This is it, mister.
This is it?
Yep.
Okay, if you say so. But if this is a millionaire's idea... Hey, wait a minute! Well, if this really is the place, I may as well get...
Can't you read? You touch that gate and you'll be electrocuted.
What?
Your name, Dalla?
That's right. Who are you and what's the idea?
Speak up! Where were you at exactly 2:00 yesterday afternoon?
Well, if it means anything to you, I was talking with a man named Bert Major in Hartford, Connecticut.
Come in.
The big gate swung open, and I gingerly walked through it, as per instruction from the loudspeaker nestled in the wall of the redwood blockhouse.
You drive, don't you?
Yes.
Then get in that car you see there and follow the road.
The car referred to by the voice was parked against the blockhouse on the far side. I did as I was told. After a while, the road narrowed to a single track and continued on up the mountain. At one point, there was a solid granite overhang, a sheer drop of 1,000 feet or more, and another gate that opened as I approached it and closed behind me. Finally, I rounded a turn where a fill had been made, and a moment later, it came out on top. A few hundred yards away, across the terrace top of the mountain, was a charming rustic lodge. I drove over to it.
Good morning, Mr. Dalla.
Mr. Billings?
Come in.
Hearing about this man was strange enough. Seeing him was even more of a shock. About 5'2", flashing gray eyes, bullet bald. He was wearing a baggy old jacket that hung nearly to his knees.
This way. I want you to see my view of the lakes below. Well?
Beautiful.
What was that?
I said beautiful.
Yes, it is. Now, Mr. Major has informed you of the insurance on my diamonds, which disappeared 2 nights ago.
Yes, sir. He told me that...
Speak up!
He told me you insured $2 million worth of diamonds against theft by persons or things unknown on this earth.
Exactly. And I wish to collect from your company on that basis.
Well, I... Tell me, where did you keep them?
Right here on this table in front of the window, right here.
You mean to say you didn't lock up such valuable property?
Mr. Dalla, let me show you something. Look here on my control panel. Do you recall the series of gates you passed through after leaving the main road?
Yeah, very well.
Well, by means of my electronic devices, I followed your progress every inch of the way.
Well, I'll be darned.
I watched your arrival at the main gate on this video screen. Ingenious, eh?
That's putting it mildly.
What did you say?
I say that's putting it mildly.
Yes. As I'm sure you noticed, this mountaintop is completely encircled by a 12-foot electrified fence. Between it and the inner fence is a maze of photoelectric cells. This panel controls floodlights with which I can cover every inch of ground between the two fences. These viewers are geared to the floodlights. All of this equipment is automatically activated on contact. In short, Mr. Dalla, I can detect and follow any person or thing which moves through or between these two fences.
Anyone who knows electricity could cut your fences and come right on up the road.
I did not say this mountaintop was impregnable. I said no one could reach it without my knowledge.
Why did you take out such limited insurance on your diamonds, Mr. Billings?
I've made my money by leaving nothing, absolutely nothing, to chance. Now that man has projected objects into outer space, it is reasonable to assume that other planets may be ahead of us in technical endeavors. Diamonds would be of tremendous value to an unknown civilization.
Well, look, how do I know this is not just an elaborate scheme to collect $2 million?
A fair question, Mr. Dollar.
What would prevent you from hiding those diamonds somewhere on this mountain?
I should consider that question an affront to my integrity, but under the circumstances, I do not. I simply defy you to find them.
Then what's your explanation of their disappearance?
I have none. And unless you find one, I intend to collect from your company under the terms of the policy.
Mr. Major mentioned the chief of police in Lakeview. Do you mind if I talk to him?
Andy Prentice? Not at all. I have a direct phone to his office and he's home. Would you care to talk to him now?
No, thanks. But I would like to use your car.
By all means. I'll open the gates for you on your way down. Just one point. There must be no publicity on this matter. Understood?
Mr. Billings, if I can't prove that your diamonds were taken by a person, those space cats are going to get a lot of publicity.
Act three of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, in a moment. And now, Act three of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, and the Diamond Dilemma Matter.
While I drove down the mountain with gates electronically opening and closing behind me, I did some thinking. Billings had bought and paid for his privacy at tremendous cost. I couldn't see any loopholes in the setup. Yet, the diamonds had disappeared. 45 minutes later, I pulled up in front of the police station in Lakeview. Obviously, I was expected by the chief of police, Andy Prentice.
Hello, Mr. Dollar. My name's Prentice. Mind if I join you?
No, hop in.
Just cruise down by the lake. I'm sure you want this to be a private conversation, too.
Good idea.
Now, what's your opinion on the diamonds?
Well, I don't know who took them, but I'll tell you one thing. I don't believe it was some thing or somebody from outer space.
Well, how would you get through all those electrified fences, photoelectric cells, floodlights, and closed-circuit viewers?
Yeah. Well, what's your opinion?
I'm as practical and logical as the next fella. If a human being couldn't get to Mr. Billings without his knowledge, and he'd call me the moment somebody tried, well...
Oh, sure. Spaceman.
Well, what else?
I noticed one thing, Chief. He's a little hard of hearing and doesn't wear a hearing aid.
He doesn't need one. Just turns up the volume on all that electronic stuff he has around him.
Well, suppose someone parachuted onto the top of that mountain.
How would he get out?
Man could dig under those fences.
That would leave evidence, and I've been over every inch of the ground. I've even thought of the expert pole vaulter idea. No sign. Nothing makes any sense.
Yeah, I see what you mean. How about a ride in Billings' private plane? I'd like to take a look at that mountain from the air.
I don't know what good it'll do you, but I'll go along.
Well, maybe there are spacemen, but I still don't believe it.
We're coming to it now. See the road winding up? And there's the lodge.
Yeah.
I asked the pilot to circle around the top as close as the air pockets will permit.
Good. Chief, have the pilot drop down just below the top and steer a course between the two fences all the way around.
Whatever you say. Oh, pilot!
For the next few minutes, I studied the top of that mountain from all possible angles. The road leading up to it, the terraces, the lodge itself. Suddenly, an idea hit me. And a few minutes later, I left a somewhat puzzled chief of police at the landing dock on Clear Lake. An hour later, I was explaining who I was and what I wanted to do to a somewhat incredulous captain of police at San Francisco's International Airport. I finally convinced him I wasn't out of my mind, and he reluctantly agreed to cooperate. Then, about dusk, I found myself exactly where I wanted to be, on top of Billings Mountain, calmly walking toward the lodge. evening, Mr. Billings.
Watch.
I said good evening, sir.
Mr. Dollar. Why, I don't understand.
See? No spacesuit.
Why, I can't believe it. How did you do it? How did you get here?
The same way as the man who stole your diamonds.
But this is impossible. Impossible. My electric system gave me no warning.
That's because you have it located in the wrong place.
What?
It's in the two fences and between them halfway down the mountain. Above them, there is one level spot 50 yards across that isn't covered by your automatic whistles and bells.
But it isn't, it's not necessary.
Wrong. It's just big enough for a helicopter, which is waiting for me out there right now.
A helicopter?
You didn't see us because we came in and landed below your line of sight. You didn't hear us because you don't wear a hearing aid.
I can't believe it. But you must be right.
And you'll have to agree that your diamonds were not stolen by persons or things unknown on this earth. The terms of the policy.
Of course, of course. I disallow all claim, but I...
Good, good. Now, it's none of my business, Mr. Billings, but was your San Francisco manager, Norton Shields, a pilot during the time he was in Korea?
Why, yes. He flew rescue missions in a helicopter.
Yeah. The company that insured your diamonds against ordinary theft might be interested to learn that. Good night, Mr. Billings.
Yes. Good night, Mr. Dollar.
You know, in some ways, I felt sorry for him. He'd spent millions of dollars to insure his diamonds and his privacy. Came a real showdown, and it turned out he had neither. Oh, he'll get his diamonds back, sure, and probably buy some more. But privacy, with or without money, is a pretty hard thing to come by. At least in this man's world. Expense account total, including incidentals and transportation back to Hartford, $284.30. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Our star will return in just a moment. Now, here is our star to tell you about next week's story.
Next week, a moth, a tiny moth, solves a case involving our national security. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, originates in Hollywood and is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Today's story was written by Alan Botsey. Heard in our cast were Edwin Jerome, Paul Dubois, Frank Gerstle, Junius Matthews, and Marvin Miller. Be sure to join us next week, same time and station, for another exciting story of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. This is Dan Cumberly speaking.
We heard Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, The Diamond Dilemma Matter, with an original air date of the 2nd of March, 1958. Again, I'm uncertain if that's when the Armed Forces Radio aired it or when it was aired on CBS. My name is Arthur, and you've been listening to The Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org. Medford Tufts Freeform Radio. I still got some time here, so I'm going to play out an album, Mel Blanc Associates, titled Super Fun. I originally heard this, one of these skits, on the 19th of March from Pete, who hosts NU All Along here on WMFO on Friday nights from 5 to 6. I was rather impressed, so I went out and bought the album. Hope you enjoy it. I know some folks have expressed interest in Mel Blanc, but this is not his show. This is another skit series.
It's time for information time. And here he is, the man with all the information, Dr. Lionel Fendishman.
And here is my first piece of information. The Red Sea is not a sea at all, but a life-size statue of Kate Smith made out of strawberry jello that melted. And here's the second item. The state of Louisiana was named after the famous Roman general and emperor, Julius Caesar.
Dr. Fendishman.
Yes, Harvey, what is it? Can't you see I'm very busy?
That last fact, I don't quite understand.
What's the matter?
Well, you said that the state of Louisiana was named after Julius Caesar.
That's right. You see, Julius Caesar was born in the year 102 B.C., and he was named then. But Louisiana didn't exist until the 17th century, so he wasn't named until that time, therefore.
Louisiana was named after Julius Caesar.
Mm-hmm, that's correct.
You've been listening to Information Time.
Today's chapter of The Treadmill of Life. As we join our story today, Dr. Whitcomb has just come out of the operating room.
Sandra, I'm afraid to report I have some bad news.
Well, just how bad will that news be? We'll find out in the next dramatic episode of The Treadmill of Life.
Today's installment of The Treadmill of Life was written by Arnold Fredericks, Osborne Tucker, and Shepard Flanders.
Special material by Wilton Pasternak, Seymour Gibbons, and James T. Baxes.
Additional dialogue by Abner Haskell, David Emerson, David Pollack, and Elias Davis.
Script supervision by Edward L. Carter, Franklin Hill, Dean Stapleton, and Martin Tracy.
Research editors Mike Conway, Lorne Braddock, and Steve Miller.
Closing credits written by Terrence Walling, Zeke Edwards, Arnold Shapiro, and Zachariah Costello.
This is Charles Dietrich.
And Randolph Collins, signing off for the entire Treadmill of Life staff.
Vielleicht! Auf dieses ausgemacht zu viel gesund, was man hat und nicht mag nach Frausieser, Ausieser, aufgehört, Lügenfasser. Und das war I like about the South, kiddo.
And now, open forum of the air. This feature permits responsible citizens to express their views on critical issues. Today's guest is Mr. Morris Sullivan.
All the news media seem to tell us only the bad things teenagers do today. And most people have come to think of teenagers as a bunch of wild-living, reckless, irresponsible punks. I, as a citizen, feel I have an obligation to give a side of this picture I personally was involved in. The other night, I was driving along a rather sparsely populated section of our city when all of a sudden my car had a flat tire. I pulled off the road to fix it and discovered that my jack was missing. Just about that time, a group of teenage boys and girls happened alongside in an open convertible and shot me.
Thank you, Mr. Morris Sullivan.
A year ago at the Club Domino, only the MC, Jack Berger, smoked Creemans. Now, nobody does, because the Club Domino burned to the ground as a result of a fire in Jack's dressing room.
I'm sorry, sir. You can't come in here. We are on the air.
I know. I'm Art Werner, and I'm supposed to come in now and sing a song on behalf of National Insect Week.
Is it National Insect Week already?
Yes.
My, oh my, how time does fly.
Mm-hmm.
Why not take that microphone, which happens to be right over there?
Thank you. Just a minute, please. This is Art Werner with an original song on behalf of National Insect Week. Now. M is for the many things she gave me. O is for the other things she tried. T is for the thousand things she gave me. H is for the hundred sighs she sighed. Put them all together, they spell more.
We now switch controls to one of America's two great interviewers, Boyd Poindexter. Come in, Boyd Poindexter.
Dexter here with the hives. And another special guest, who is Mr. Sidney Marcuso, president of Gamblers Anonymous, the organization dedicated to the rehabilitation of compulsive gamblers. Welcome to the show again, Mr. Marcuso.
What do you mean again?
I believe you were my guest several months ago.
No. This is the first time.
I'm sure you were here before.
$50 says I wasn't.
This is Boyd Poindexter returning you...
I'll give you 8 to 5.
...to our main studio.
Somewhere over the...
Somewhere. I can't go on tonight. I can't. Sorry.